Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here at our kitchen table to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And our kitchen table is right here in the studio of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa. And KHOI Community Radio just celebrated its 12th birthday, 12 years of doing this here in central Iowa. We had a nice celebration on Sunday, a little windy, sunny but windy. Everyone came to this studio here at KHOI and brought treats. Thank you, Donna. The biscotti were lovely.
Yes, it was a dessert potluck.
See, how Midwestern can you get? And I don't think, people may complain about, oh, I shouldn't eat,
and
I shouldn't eat.
What did you, brought do. Ginger snaps.
Ginger snaps.
Lana's the supreme cookie maker.
But, oh, there were pies, there were cakes, there were good things. There were actually, there were a kind of a frozen treat popsicle thing that was frozen coconut thing there. Kind of a little messy, but worth tasting. Lots of good things at the KHOI birthday potluck. 12 years of community radio here in central Iowa. Well, I think we're going to get the first frost tonight, Donna.
Oh, it wasn't last night?
Well, it was. I don't know. I think we're pretty nipped, and it's going to be colder tonight. So there you go. It's time.
Here we go.
Fall colors, frost. It's time.
Well, after all, it's almost Halloween.
Oh, almost.
The frost is on the pumpkin.
You have to say that every year. Yes, you go. Well, as I drive around this town, I live in a little farm just on the edge of town, and to get back and forth to my farm, I have to cross the railroad tracks in the northwest corner of town, and every time I go across the railroad tracks, I take a look to the west, because there's always things going on that corner, because the northwest edge of town, there's this old grain elevator on Reliable Street. Yes,
it's monumental. You cannot miss it.
And for quite a few years now, things have been going on, things have been changing there, and part of that conglomeration of nice stuff is a cafe called Lockwood. Joining us today is Sharon Stewart. We're going to talk about that process and her cafe and all sorts of things. Welcome to our kitchen table, Sharon.
Thank you for having me.
Well, good, good. So, tell us about the cafe. Tell us about Lockwood and kind of a quick synopsis of how this whole thing started, because I wouldn't have given you two nickels for somebody could have put a restaurant in or a cafe. And it was just an old grain elevator. What inspired you? How did you get started?
Oh, it is not a quick story, but I'll try to summarize it. So many years ago, gosh, now maybe 8 years ago, some friends of ours, my husband and I, asked us to do a walkthrough of this old grain elevator. And we, of course, said yes. And through the process of being in this space, it was apparent that there was a lot of history here and a lot of potential. And collectively,
well, we have to say that it hadn't been a grain elevator for years. It was a mechanics, garage mechanic.
Yes.
It was full of old automotive greasy.
It was full of a lot of
detritus.
Things.
Yes.
But the bones were there and the story was there. And when you work with creative people, the future is an open-ended story. And we started to kind of daydream of what this could be. And Lindsay and Elliot approached me. I had coffee with Elliot and he said, "Hey, do you want to open a coffee shop?" And I said yes, without even taking a second to think of it.
A long time dream of yours?
No. I had worked in the service industry since I was 14. I started a little mom and pop diner back a long, long time ago. And I've worked in all different types of of restaurants. I've done all different types of jobs. And it's an industry that I've always felt very at home at, specifically cafes and coffee shops.
It's not a sit-down job, I used to say.
No, it is not. It is very active. I definitely get my steps in. So the idea of what that could be just kind of continued to evolve as we built the space. We were definitely hands on board and making the space come together as a collective group. And
It's a concrete building.
It is thick.
I can't remember. Elliot told me how many tons of concrete were poured to make that building.
I don't remember, but I do know it was a continuous pour. So they had just constant trucks coming, just dumping concrete into this. And it's because, as you know, grain is very, very flammable. And so in order for them to have a structure that wouldn't burn like the other structures on the property had done, they poured the concrete. And at the time, it was the most technologically advanced grain elevators. You can still, in the backspace, you can still see the actual elevator. You know, it's like, put your hands here, stand here, like, don't move.
And it's right by the train track,
too. Yes. Yeah. Because that was
a very active train track.
Yeah. The mode of transit.
So when did you open as a cafe?
October 1st, 2019.
Very good.
Yeah. As a brick and mortar.
Very good. Very good.
And more mortar than brick.
Cement. Yeah. Right. Okay.
But then the world shut down for a while. That sounds like a pretty bad thing, but you kind of saw it as an opportunity.
For us, in the position that we were in, it provided us a little space to breathe and reconsider the space. We'd only been open for 5 or 6 months at that point. And when we closed, it was a no-brainer to close. My whole hope of the space is that we would promote a healthy environment, both for what you're putting in your body and how you can interact with people, as well as the people that are working in the space.
And then COVID happened.
So it was a no-brainer. We're going to close our doors. And we didn't really know what that was going to look like. But it turned out that it gave us a little bit of space to really consider what we wanted to be and how we were going to make the space work. We changed our hours. We modified our menu. We changed the way the space functioned for the first 5 months. When you open a restaurant, everyone's got big dreams, right? You're going to make the most spectacular thing ever. It's going to be, right? You're going to have this, everything's going to be perfect. And it never goes that way. You never open on time. You never open with things change. It's life. And so we had this time to really reconsider the space. And, you know, like we were initially, I wanted the food to be brought to the table. So we did little table numbers. Well, that's great in theory, but in practice, it wasn't working.
Yeah.
It was an additional step. And one of the things that we really like to consider is the job of what it means to be a customer. Oftentimes in the service industry, we think the only person that has a job is the person that's making or serving the food. But when you enter a space, you have a role to play. And so we came up with some language to define what the role was. We have three words that are posted throughout the space: kind, courteous, and patient.
Yes. Be kind, be courteous, and be patient.
And we'll get along fabulously.
Yeah. We should put those everywhere, all over the world. That's it. That's the responsibility for being human.
Yeah. And you know, as the crew, we want to do that. We want to be kind to ourselves, to each other, and to the customers. We want to be courteous, right? We want to prep. We want to think about the next person that's going to be in the space. We want to make sure that the space is presentable. We want to be patient with ourselves, with the customers. It's only fair that the customers do the same. And so that was something that came out of COVID, was thinking about that relationship. So we actually worked with the College of Design. Alex Braidwood is a professor, and he is in the graphic design department. And he had his class do a project. And so that was their project, as they designed all of these little posters that are all around Lockwood Cafe, so that we've got the language there, we've got the verbiage there. And the idea is just to create a space where we're all adding to it, and we're all bringing something to the table.
good. So part of the customer's responsibility is that they walk up to your menu and turn to you and they order. You don't take orders at the table.
Yeah.
And that saves steps. I mean, it does.
It does. It's counter service. And we always had we didn't do full table service, but we were bringing food out. And initially it was great because I could see what was selling. I could see what plates were getting cleared and what plates weren't getting cleared. I could see what drinks were getting, you know, left half full. Like, why is, you know, it gave me time to really consider what was coming back from the kitchen. Which is why I think anybody in the service industry, if you are an owner operator, you should be doing dishes. It's a really great way to see what's working and what's
right.
not.
Sharon does not have a dish machine.
No, we did. And it was more trouble than it was worth. So now
had a machine and
we
you
started
took it out?
Yeah. We were having a hard time getting the right chemicals for, they stopped continuing this or discontinued the chemical that we were using as a sanitizer. And everything now had a really strong bleach smell to
it.
And so it's one of those under counter.
They had biodegradable ones for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. And so.
Was it Ecolab? Is that? That's what everybody has to use. You have to use it practically.
Yeah. And it was one of those things where it was like, for now, we'll take it out. And if we decide to add it back in, we might. But we like the way it's working now.
And you have real plates and real silverware. You don't throw things away much. I mean, napkins,
yeah, we try not to.
Yeah. So my goodness, washing dishes. But that it can be done. It can be done. Good for you.
It's a skill set that everyone should have, really.
Absolutely. Do you know, forever in my home until I moved here, I did not have a dishwasher myself. It's like, I'd rather have it for storage space. You know, I had small kitchens and I thought, I can wash these dishes, whereas I need the storage space. So we just took the dishwasher out.
Even at our home right now, our dishwasher currently is a drying rack.
Exactly. I would not have put one in my current home, except my sister insisted. And she said, well, think of the resale value. You can't have a home without a dishwasher. And I went, oh, oops. Okay. So let me ask you about some startup costs. People don't think about these things. Grease trap.
Expensive.
Yeah.
What is and why? And it sounds icky.
It's essentially, it's something that helps with the the municipal sewage system. I think it's necessary. And the cost of it, though, especially if you're dealing with an older building. Made out of cement. You've got to dig up a lot of cement. And mm-hmm. when you're dealing with a facility that has more rebarb than the most people have ever seen in poured concrete.
Was that your biggest startup expense?
It was, yeah.
I remember when Dev was opening Morning Bell, he had to put a grease trap in that building. He told me, even in that teeny weeny building, it was $20,000 to put the grease trap in.
You know what I did, though? There's lots of workarounds. We have a grease trap. It works wonderfully. But to buy a grease trap to go through a contractor was very expensive. So what I did is I signed up as a plumber.
Well, you've done everything
myself.
Else. Why not?
You didn't have to have a certification to be a plumber. You could just say that Lockwood Plumbing existed for a short period of time. And I was able to work directly with a wholesaler that way. And so I drove to somewhere in Missouri, I don't even remember where, with my infant at the time. We showed up and we put the grease trap in the back of my car and I drove back with it. And I was able to cut the cost by 40% that way. Like,
whoa.
It was a huge savings because that's a mark. That's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, any work you have done in the building that has to be done by a certified.
A licensed.
So we had a licensed plumber come and do the work of installing the grease trap.
But I bet he thought you were very clever.
He's still our plumber. So we have a great relationship.
Well, I remember when you were getting ready to buy the crepe griddles, right?
Yeah.
And one of the, and this, so the other expensive item in a restaurant is ventilation and hoods. So if you have any open flame, you are required to have heavy ventilation with fire retardant sprays and yada, blah, blah, blah. So you avoided all that by not having any open. And now everybody is using electric. I think in New York, you can no longer even, if you have a new restaurant and build it, you cannot use gas anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. It's all either induction or like your electric crepe griddles.
Yeah. So what triggers the need for a hood vent is the equipment. So equipment has, it's rated. If it's commercial, it's rated. And what that rating is determines whether or not you have to have a hood vent. So I only bought equipment that does not require a hood vent. And I researched what that was, and that's what we got. Because the cost of putting in a hood vent was astronomical.
Maybe worse than that grease trap.
It would have been more than our total opening. But I mean, it was wild.
Yeah. Well, because the ceiling above your thing was of like 3 foot of concrete.
Also, it turns out poured concrete.
Yeah, right.
And that's the same thing with the fire suppression or whatever the system.
Systems.
If square footage and occupancy determines whether or not you have to have. So we built essentially a building inside of a building. So we have all of the walls that are the structure of Lockwood and the gallery are fire suppressant walls. And that's what afforded us to not need to do a whole, so then we could just
the whole sprinkler system.
Yeah, we got out of that so we designed the area, which when you're working with creative people, you're like, well, yeah, let's just make it smaller. Let's change this amount of kitchen space has a different occupancy rating than dining. Okay, well, then we'll call it this and we'll put the bar here and we'll change. So we had time to do all of that, and that ended up saving us a lot of money and then creating a space that we really love.
So I was over last night and I was standing kind of, sorry, I do this after many years. I stand in kitchens and feel, okay, this is how that works. And then I was behind the bar, which is essentially still part of your kitchen.
Yeah.
Because that's where the crepe griddles are and that's where the coffee service is.
Yes.
And it is, as I was standing there, I went, oh, this is a fairly large space. Usually you don't, because that's actually your working space.
Yeah.
That's where most of the action happens.
So I've worked in places where the behind the bar space was so tight.
You're bumping into everybody all the time.
And you can't get away from needing to be on show, right? Like when you're in the service industry, there's an expectation that you're all smiles and you're, you know, like nobody wakes up every day that way. Sometimes we just need to be in the dish room getting, you know, like there's times where I'm like, I show up and I'm like, can I just do dishes? I just want to get away. And there's other times that I want to be at the register and I have that energy where that's where I want to be. So the space, we wanted it to be big enough that we had room to work and room to move. And then it was really important that we had a space away from being customer facing for prep and just to be able to, you know, work outside of the open kitchen.
Oh, there's so much to think about to set this up. Oh, my goodness. You've got a great space to work in. How many people generally are bumping into each other in the back there? I mean, not bumping into
ping pong balls.
You have to learn how to do the kitchen dance back there. So, how many people are on call most of the time?
So we, on a slower, it depends on how the day of the week, how busy we are. 3 people in the middle of a day on a slower day works well, but we have shifts that overlap. So, you know, to have one person on crepes, one person on drinks, one person on register, and then with the dishes, it really just depends on how busy we are. But on the weekends, I think it's, I can count my hands here. 2, 3, 4. We have a crew of 8.
Ooh. So Saturday and Sunday are your big days.
Yeah. And it's gotten busy enough now where you know, on the weekends, mm-hmm. we just, it's go time.
Yeah, like I said, I look toward, you know, as I cross the railroad tracks, check your place out, and there are cars, especially on the weekend. People have found you. One nice thing about your place, you have inside seating, but you also have outside seating. Is there special, did you have to, like, get special stuff for outside seating?
So the outside space is actually part of Reliable Street as a whole space. Mm-hmm. So if people choose to take their food out there, that's a choice they can make. But it's technically not part of Lockwood.
Aha.
So it is just a space that people can choose to enjoy. And if they would like to sit inside, they can choose to do that.
How fortuitous.
Well, and when you started with just the cart, when you didn't have an inside, it was all outside.
It was. And the city gave us permission to use that space for that purpose. Mm-hmm. But we did have to, there's like a little bit of the awning that's not attached to the building mm-hmm. In the outdoor space. And that was fire code. We had to take down part of the awning because it was too close. It was connected to the building and it was going to either change the occupancy, which would make us need to have another restroom. And it was like, oh, wait. What if instead we just take down a section so that it's technically not attached.
Oh, for goodness
sake. And that worked.
Yeah, there's so many. Now, this is infrastructure. This is, oh my goodness. And then, of course, so did they tell, are there rules about how many people can park on the street or whatever?
So we are zoned as commercial neighborhood, which is a really beautiful zone that I wish the city would embrace more and use more often, because the idea that we have these commercial nodes within a community is how people connect,
yeah.
right? A place that's walkable, bikeable, where you're going to maybe meet a neighbor or you're going to be walking by and go, oh, what's that? The idea that we need these neighborhoods that are just homes and everything's, you know, little boxes. It's one of my kids' favorite songs, The Tiny Boxes. Do you know,
yeah.
you know what I'm
yeah.
talking about? Yeah. Really doesn't allow people to connect. And so because of that zone, because it's neighborhood commercial, it can be street parking. We actually had to work with the city to change the language for neighborhood commercial to allow on-street parking to fulfill our parking requirement. So it's the same basic parking requirements as downtown and campus town, which we fought for. And we actually had to go in front of the city council. We met with each council member to work to change this language so that the street parking could accommodate our parking requirements.
That is so much better than, like, putting in more parking.
Which is what initially they wanted us to do. And we're like, you want us to take away the green space.
Yeah, you have a lovely green space.
That is so important for the way this whole property functions, and put in a concrete parking lot. And the parking lot, where it would have fit, would have still required people to walk anyway. And it's like, this is negating the whole idea of what we want to create. And if it's busy enough that people have to park on a side street and walk half a block.
Hallelujah, right?
I think that's good for everybody. We shouldn't. And, you know, there is accessibility. We do have, there's spaces available. But yeah, that both saved us money and encouraged a space that I think works for what we're trying to create.
Creative use just to get started. Now, like Donna was talking about earlier, what a nice do. I think I'll open a restaurant. What a good idea. There's so much to think about. My goodness. We'll come back and talk more with Sharon Stewart about Lockwood Cafe and its ongoing successes. This is KHOI Community Radio. You are listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We're talking about the Lockwood Cafe, northwest edge of town, a neighborhood success, I would say.
Yeah, and if you ever had a fantasy of wanting to own a restaurant, you can talk to Sharon about it. She can tell you what happens when you really do it.
We're talking to Sharon Stewart.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah. Oh, yes, like, as most fantasies are. You
right?
Know. Oh,
yes.
I think I'll do this. Oops, yeah. So tell me about, you have quite a lot of staff.
I get to work with amazing, amazing humans.
Oh, they are all adorable, actually. And most of them are female, but not all of them. But so I was saying to Sharon, well, this is sort of like a finishing school. You have a lot of young girls working for you.
Right? And they're finishing out quite nicely.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, okay. They are.
I mean, how do I say this? The industry has historically been a very toxic place to work. The service industry was built on a model that...
Of abuse.
Of abuse, yes. Abuse and racism, if we're being honest.
And sexism.
And
for
sexism,
sure, yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that model is toxic and dangerous and promotes just an unhealthy lifestyle for the people in the industry. And one of my hopes was to really question and change that. And honestly, by hiring just strong, powerful people, I don't care what experience they have. We can all learn. I'm not looking for a resume. In fact, we don't even do resumes when we're looking for new applicants. Our process is send us 3 questions and 3 answers to those questions, and then we'll go from there. Because even the resume is something that historically is problematic. And so just changing the system from the ground up and then getting to work with just these dynamite people, I learned so much. I think that, like, just the language of, do you have employees? No, I don't own people. I get to work with people. Do they work for you? No, they work with me.
Together.
We are working on this together. So there's... Yes, at the end of the day, I have the final say. I'm the one that writes the checks. I'm the one that manages the money. Like this, at the end of the day, this is my business, and I am responsible for those final say decisions. But throughout the course of changes, if somebody has an idea, go for it. Do it. What do you want to do? Let's make it happen. And it's something that I've had to grow and learn how to do. Working in the industry, I've been a manager, but I've never been the one that had the final say. And so to be in that position is overwhelming. And at first, I didn't really want the job. I didn't realize that was the job I was taking on, that I had to be the boss. And it's like, I don't know what's, you know, looking around at everyone I work with, like, what do you think I should do? What do you think I should do? But the truth is, that's not their job. They didn't join the crew to be the boss. That's my job. So I needed to step up, and I'm still learning how to do that. But I think just being honest and transparent with people and vulnerable and kind, patient, courteous, you know, we all work together, and it's amazing. I feel very honored to work with people I get to work with.
I was a waitress before I started cooking, so I learned restaurant business from that side of it. And I worked at the restaurant owner, my most favorite restaurant owner, used to say, to serve is to rule. Because he was like, you know, helping us to be empowered rather than subservient. And yeah. And also, there's some, if you've ever watched Upstairs, Downstairs, or any of those British things where they have lots of staff, you realize it's the staff that is the support of everything and knows
absolutely
what is really going on.
Lockwood's success is not my success. Yeah. Lockwood's success is the community's success. Uh-huh. And the community that works in that space is what makes it work.
Ha. And also, they're called service professions, but really being a good servant and learning to serve is a very intricate skill set. You really have to pay attention to what people want, what they need, and help them figure it out. And there comes your be kind, be patient, be
courteous.
Courteous. Yeah. Yeah. Those, that is all. And service is a wonderful thing.
It is. And it creates a space where people can connect. And that was always the goal. We live in such a divisive time. Everybody is in or out, right? Like this is good. This is bad. And so to have a space where people can connect and communicate, maybe there's something you don't know. Like there was a moment, I have this vivid memory of looking out and seeing the cafe, and there was a table of young college students just being boisterous and having a great time. And there was a table of, there was a family which was, I presume, Muslim, and they were enjoying their space. And then there was a table that was, you know, mixed races. It was just like all genders, all ages. And then there was a table of older women sitting together having their morning coffee. And it was just this beautiful mix of community. And I looked out and I thought, this is what Ames is.
Absolutely. This is,
we are all here together.
It is a small town and we can get along.
And to find spaces where you can connect and meet people outside of your social circle, outside of your online presence, outside of, you know, the isolating world that people live in, that expands your vision of who you can know and what you can learn and what you can experience. Yeah. And to me, that is the most important part of Lockwood, is the space that is created for connections to happen.
That's true. Quite a few years ago, there was a I can't remember the author, but the name of the book was The Great Good Space. And
yeah,
that's exactly what every human needs some place that's not home, that's not work, that's not church.
Yeah.
It's a space.
The third place. Yeah.
It's a place.
Yeah.
You walk in, you are welcome. Everybody is welcome. And it's really a joy to watch Lockwood turn into the third place, the place to be. Well, no, it's let's go there. Let's go have a cup of coffee. But it's not just let's go have a cup of coffee. It's the community that's there.
Yeah, and watching that grow, and then having, you know, the arts connected so close, the gallery space being right next door, you know, behind the curtain, which I love. It's providing space for people to experience the arts and connection through the arts. Like that's. Art brings people together.
Very good.
And food brings people together.
Food is art.
Let's talk food. We haven't even mentioned the food at the restaurant.
We have food.
Well, Sharon and I talked before she launched into this, and this is my usual restaurant advice, and I'm sticking to it. Keep your menu really small. It's always better to do a few things really well than to have a large menu where really you don't do anything that well. So yeah. Sharon really did that. You only do crepes for the food, and then you have an extensive beverage menu.
Yes. So when I was first thinking of Lockwood and what we would serve, I really thought Lockwood was going to be a coffee shop. I walked around the neighborhood because I wanted to be a neighborhood space, and I knocked on doors and I asked people what they wanted. And the thing that I heard from almost everybody was there needed to be food. There's no food option on this part of town. There's nothing. And so I realized that that needed to be something I incorporated. What I didn't realize is that I was not going to be opening a coffee shop with a few food items, but instead a full restaurant.
With coffee
options. But I like to think of it more as a cafe, that kind of middle ground, European style cafe. But when I realized that food was something that the neighborhood really wanted, I was looking at different food options. And that was about the time that you and I talked, Donna. And I remember you saying, keep your menu. We were at your kitchen table at your house. I was there with you. I think Elliot was there as well. Maybe Lindsay was there. I don't remember.
No, it was just me and you for the food conversation.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
I trust your memory.
Yeah.
I don't trust mine.
Some things I can remember. I remember that, right?
But I remember you telling me, keep the menu simple and fresh. That stuck in my head. And I had worked at a cafe in Colorado, and a lot of the inspiration when we were building Lockwood, I worked at a little cafe that served crepes and sandwiches and coffee. And two doors down, my husband worked at a little sandwich shop. And these two places were the third place in this small town, Gunnison, Colorado. They were the places where when the town became an island due to the long winters, and there was a pass to get in and a pass to get out. So we were snowbound. When we became an island in the mountains, the community came together in these two places. They were staples, and you knew that you could go sit at the bar at the Bean was the cafe that I worked at, or you could go sit at the round family table at the Firebrand where Austin worked. And these were places where you would just have a rotating group of people connecting. So one person would get up, someone else would come in. It was just this space. And so knowing that that was kind of the environment we wanted, having spun crepes, I thought, this is something that's fresh. We can make to order. Mm-hmm. It's a diverse thing in terms of the options of sweet to savory. And it's something that nobody else is doing to this level. You know, there are other places that serve crepe options, but there's nobody that's all there. There's no creperie, you know?
Yeah.
and so that's really where, and then knowing that the griddles wouldn't require a hood vent.
So you have three griddles.
We have three griddles now. We started off with two. And I don't think we have space for four. I think it would max us out. And we want the food preparation to match the space we have, right? So like the amount of food we can make should fit the amount of people the space can hold. So the kitchen and the eating area should kind of equal the workload. If you have too big of a kitchen and not enough room to eat, then you've got people waiting in line for a table. If you have too much space and a small kitchen, then you've got people sitting at a table waiting for food. We want to hit that middle ground. So with the crepes, we just decided to try to keep things simple, which is why our menu is short and simple.
So you have sweet crepes, dessert crepes, and savory crepes.
Yes.
I'm a fan of savory crepes.
I am too.
It's a meal. It's a real meal.
It is. Yeah.
And you have three kinds. The traditional one that's made out of wheat flour.
Yeah, we have three different batters that we can spin. Mm-hmm. The traditional, and then we have a dosa, which is fermented rice and lentil. It's
Indian.
It is, yeah. Very popular in southern India. Mm-hmm. And the dosa is the batter, and then you can put anything inside of it. We do have a masala dosa, which is a traditional southern Indian mm-hmm. dish. We have the chickpea batter, and both the dosa and the chickpea have no gluten added and no dairy added. And the chickpea is kind of hearty, and yeah.
I'll have to come try the chickpea one sometime.
Yeah, please do. You know where to find us.
Yeah, I recently had, I don't remember the name of it because I couldn't pronounce it. It was a crepe that had beets in it.
The roasted shroot.
The crepe itself was...
It was a red crepe.
Red. Yes.
Very pretty.
Yes. Tell us about that. That's a savory one, right?
That is a savory one. That was a crepe that came about after the pandemic when we reopened. And we were looking to kind of make some changes and find a crepe that would be hearty. I love beets. But as you know, working with beets is not only...
It's very messy.
It's messy. It's
everything
time-consuming.
Turns pink.
Yes.
It's not your made-to-order kind of vegetable.
It's really, there's an extra labor of love involved with beets. And so I ordered some beet powder and mixed it in with the batter to see how it would work. And I've tried different powders. Like I tried a carrot powder that was terrible.
No, the beet stays consistently a nice color.
It does. It's beautiful, and it adds just a nice earthiness to the batter, so it works really well.
Yeah, except for There is a recipe for beet brownies. People think that's... I don't like them. You know what? Let's put the beets in the crepes, okay? You know?
Very good.
A beet chocolate cake, right? It's not quite like carrot cake. No.
If I make that, I won't tell you what's in it.
No, don't.
You'll like it. You're listening to KHOI. You can find out more at www.khoifm.org. This is the Donalana Kitchen, and you can find out more on KHOI's website. You'll find the Donalana Kitchen webpage. We have recipes. We have archives. You can find out more than you ever wanted to know about us. Welcome back. Donalana Kitchen is talking to Sharon Stewart today, and we're talking about crepes. The crepes are not pancakes. Crepes are crepes.
They are French in origin.
Yes.
And traditionally in France, crepes can be sweet, usually with as simple as a little sugar sprinkled on them and rolled
fresh
up.
Lemon, yeah.
Sugar and butter. My favorite ones are always cheese is very standard.
Yes.
Or cheese and egg.
Yeah.
And so you do all those things.
Yeah. We have a breakfast special that is cheese and an egg and fresh house-made pico on top.
Oh, okay. That part's not French.
No.
We're a little cross-cultural.
We're still in Iowa, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the breakfast special was actually something that was put on the menu to make the menu accessible. My dad, he's a meat and mashed potatoes guy, you know,
like eggs for breakfast.
Yes. And you know, grew up in Western Kansas, dinners on, you know, farm boy. So I wanted something on the menu that if my dad saw, he would say, I know what that is. I want that. Something that's, you know, it's like having a cup of Joe. If somebody comes in and just wants, I don't want them to be overwhelmed by the coffee options. Like, I don't know what kind of roast I want. Great. We have coffee. Do you want coffee? We've got that.
Coffee or tea? Right.
Yeah. And so the breakfast special is meant to be something that is accessible because I think sometimes we lose, people don't feel, when we talk about a third place, it's how accessible is it?
Yeah, if the not menu everybody wants a beet crepe.
Right? But if you want a beet crepe, we've got that
too.
Yeah.
So you did, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 savory crepes, and then there are the sweet crepes.
Yes.
Now, do you sell more sweet than savory?
You know, it is pretty much down the middle.
Good.
Yeah, depending on the day. Uh-huh. It's interesting to watch, but and like when people say, well, what's the highest selling? It's like, it depends on the day. There's one day where you're like, wow, we sold a lot of apple breeze today. That was the crepe. Cinnamon apple crisp is very popular in the fall and the winter. Everything's on the menu because it's popular. If it's not popular, it wouldn't be on the menu.
And how often do you change your menu?
So not very often.
Yeah.
We try to have specials, and specials are great because they can bring in seasonal produce. Mm-hmm. We've worked with Root to Rise in the past. Right now we've got a crepe special called the Jalapeno Popper that Jesse, someone who works there, came up with, and it's addicting. It's
what
I
it?
Want.
Cream cheese and jalapenos?
And cheddar cheese. And then it's got the fried wontons on top with a sweet chili sauce and pickled jalapeno.
Oh,
it's like,
oh dear.
It's what I want when I come home from school, you know, like it's that, like it's me as a 16-year-old kid coming home. Like, this is what I want. I love it. But the specials are also a great way to encourage creativity in anybody that wants to try making something new. So, you know, drink specials. Almost everyone that works at Lockwood that I can think of has been a part of making specials. And naming specials.
You
and
have
coming
a
up with
very
ideas.
Big drink menu.
Yes.
There's the hot and then the cold.
Yes.
And you do make your own syrups and
we
have
do.
Your own Italian sodas.
Yes.
Bravo.
Yes.
So let me read the Lockwood syrups options.
There's... Wait, they might have changed.
Okay, all right.
I'll read them.
Okay, go for it.
This one might not have some things crossed off. We're really trying to simplify things. This is...
It's a good idea.
This is my phase of life in my 40s. Simple is better.
Well, that's what I was trying to explain to you when I was talking to you in my 60s, right?
I'm learning. I'm catching up. So we make our own, and all of our syrups are made without any dairy added. So everything is, again, accessible.
Sugar and flavor and water. Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got caramel, cardamom, chocolate, ginger, jalapeno basil, lavender rose, raspberry, vanilla, and then occasionally we have special release syrups that, again, get
to seasonal.
And use the creativity of anybody who wants to try something. And if no one's feeling creative, then the answer is no, we don't have one right now.
You've got plenty in your menu anyway. There you go. So good.
And you're using Morning Bell Coffee.
We are.
It's roasted locally.
Yes. And it's such a wonderful business.
It's really good. It's always good coffee.
Yes.
Okay. I had a drink, which I had never had before, called a dirty chai latte.
Yes.
It was really good. Really, really good. So it's chai with a shot of espresso in it.
Yeah. So we make our chai, we make a cardamom syrup, and then we do a chai concentrate, and then it's chai concentrate plus milk steamed together, and then a shot of espresso.
Okay. So in your chai concentrate, obviously tea.
Yes.
Ginger.
We just do the tea, and then, we use a chai tea though. So it has some ginger flavors to it.
Oh, a chai tea. Okay, so you're... Okay, right.
Yeah.
And then you add cardamom to it.
Yeah.
And then you put the espresso in it.
Yes.
Knocked my socks off.
Yeah.
See, they were saying, there's nothing new under the sun. That was new to me. To give me a new flavor. Yes! It's so exciting. Flavor is everything. Oh, my goodness.
I agree. Yes.
It was really good. Yeah. But you also have espresso. I mean... Cortado, you have all of the, what are you calling the hot chocolate?
Oh, so hot chocolate and then separate a steamer. So steamer is like a hot chocolate, but instead of chocolate, any flavor. So like my kids like vanilla steamers sometimes.
Oh, so it's just steamed milk with the syrup in it.
Yeah.
Oh, what a good idea.
Oh, and then simple. You get all those.
Yeah.
Yeah, the drinks represents when I thought I was opening a coffee shop. And then turning to a cafe, we added the other side. But I think there's the options are all there, but the ingredients stay. It's,
Okay, there is no Coca-Cola.
There isn't.
Yes.
Look at that.
Okay, I have to brag a little bit. One time, so Paul Newman used to do these camps kind of all over the country for children with medical disabilities where they can come for like a regular camp session, 5 to 7 days. And of course they have a medical team there for whatever the disability is. So they were opening one in California and I was, part of the planning of it. And when I said to them, because they wanted this one to be organic, and I said to them, okay, don't put in soda lines. The architect went ahead and drew it up and said, of course, I said, no deep fryer and no soda lines. The architect, he'd like, what do you mean no soda lines? I said, no soda lines, right?
Yeah.
We did not have soda lines. So the people that started the camp, it was Lou Adler. He's a big deal music producer. He's also a huge basketball fan. And they actually built their own basketball court. So some of the Lakers guys showed up. We had to produce a Pepsi-Cola for them. And I said, I don't have any. It's like somebody had to run out and get it. We did not have soda.
So who is spoiled? Not the kids, but the basketball players.
Oh, yeah, right. They just couldn't imagine not drinking soda.
Yeah, but you know, when somebody asks, like, we do have people that ask for that, and it's, no, but there are other options.
Well,
and
then you can try Italian something sodas. Right.
And our lemonade, the Lockwood lemonade juice, it's fresh squeezed lemon juice with a syrup, so it's, and sparkling water. So you can get your soda fix.
Absolutely.
All the while.
We have nothing against bubbles. We like bubbles.
Yes.
It's the rest of the stuff they're putting in it.
And it's, the idea is I just want our menu to represent things that I know what they are. I don't want ingredients that I can't pronounce.
That's my usual thing. I try not to eat something my grandmother could not have eaten.
Yes.
All right? My grandmother did not drink Pepsi-Cola. I mean, we're talking about a woman that was born in the 1880s, so of course she didn't drink Pepsi-Cola.
But she would have overlapped, you know, that, yeah, see? Yeah. Didn't it come around the beginning of the 20th century, Pepsi or colas?
I don't actually know. I mean, of course, there was soda when I was growing up in the 50s.
It was originally a drugstore, a digestif.
When I was in high school, they were still, the drugstore had a soda fountain counter, and it was all, you know, it was the carbonated water and the Coca-Cola syrup. Yep. So they would shoot the syrup in, then pour the water over. So it did not come in cans and bottles, right?
My kids, you could have a cream soda.
Yeah.
An Italian cream soda with vanilla and cream.
Absolutely.
And you could buy cream soda at the store. So we're still doing soda, but we're just making it here with things that I know. What's in this cream soda.
Do you know what an egg cream is?
Yes.
You could make those.
I could.
Maybe do it as a special in the spring.
That's not a terrible idea.
No. It was a New York thing. I didn't, as a little Midwestern girl, I did not know what an egg cream was till I moved to New York.
It might need to come up in a crew meeting first to make sure everyone's on board.
What do you have any events or any things in the future that we can look, besides being the good, reliable Lockwood.
She's open.
Yeah, so we are open. We are closed on Mondays and Tuesdays.
Yeah, good
I know.
For you. Good
I'm
for you.
So I love being to. Closed 2 days a week.
Yeah, you have to.
It feels like the right choice. And then we're open Wednesday through Sunday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m.
8 to 3.
Okay. Yeah.
Perfect time for coffee.
Yeah, coffee and a...
And crepes. Yes. So there's always things going on that. And that, like you said, there's art being produced, there's a community garden, all sorts of things going on. It's a fine place to hang out. Thank you for being with us today, Sharon.
And thank you for creating the Lockwood Cafe. Your dreams have all come true. And your nightmares as well, probably. But, you know.
Life's a journey, not a destination.
Oh, good. Great. Well... So, I want to remind folks, now this is very nonpartisan, do remember to vote. It is important. Do show up. And in local elections, I've heard, and I always find out when I get there, do turn over your ballot. There are important things on both sides, and they don't ask our opinions enough. So when they're going to ask me to vote, I want to fill out all the blanks. So do vote, do read things over carefully, and yes... It's good for all of us. Yes, it is. We had music by the Barnall Band today. You heard a tune called Mandalude, and we'll go out with a tune called, The Dashing White Sergeant. So you've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We come to you live at noon on Tuesdays, usually with a fine guest. If not, there's just Don and I talking to each other. And then you can find it again, 7 p.m. on this station, repeated, or anytime. Go to the KHOI website, and we have an archive. You can listen to us again if you so choose. Support this fine radio station. My name is Lana Nakiko.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
And we've had excellent engineering, as usual, by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.